Well, welcome. We're glad you're here. Thank you for coming in and spending the next 40 or so minutes with Susan and I. My name is Raul, and we are the Coxes.
And I'm Susan, and I'm part of the Coxes. And this is not working. There we go.
Yours is not working?
There we go. Good? We're good.
You know, this happened last time. She's got small ears. It's true. That's
big, good. Big mouth, small ears.
But we have been married, just a little bit about us, and then we want to find out just a little bit about you guys. But we've been married for 28 years. We have two daughters, that Kristen and Brittany. And Susan actually works here with Watermark for a marriage ministry called Reengage. And I work in the payroll HR outsourcing industry for the last 25 years or so. So one of the things we're just kind of curious about that we ask couples, how many, in just different degrees, but how many of you, just out of curiosity, are regular members, are regular attenders of this church, Watermark? Okay, so.
All right, got some homebrew in the house.
Yeah, about 60% or so, okay. Now, we've got a question for you, and there's no prize for this. We actually were going to have a prize.
They used them.
But they used them. We put them in the box that they were doing, so they're gone. So, hey, no books, but anyway. How many of you, anybody here that drove more than 100 miles to come to the conference? Everybody's local.
Right.
Okay. And just for marriage-wise, just a couple of questions there. How many, anybody here that's been married less than 2 years, 2 years or less?
All right, some newbies.
Okay, yeah, some new guys. Anybody here that's been married more than 20 years? Okay.
Yay.
Well, we've got a mix of just, it's good. A good mix. Okay. Well, good. Well, I'd like to just say welcome again. And just remind you that it should not, marriage should not be this hard.
I tell you what, I don't know about you, but when I want to find out something, if I want to learn something, I have learned that the internet has all the answers. And within a matter of just 2 or 3 minutes, I can type in any question and I get an answer. So I thought, what the heck? Let's just see what the internet, Dr. Google, has to say about marriage. And so here's some things that I learned. Marriage is difficult because girls are just pre-programmed to have the whole happily ever after thing. Number two, because everybody has the idea of a fantasy marriage. You know, the one where you never argue, you always get along, you never get upset with one another, you spend all day long gazing into one another's eyes and telling each other how much you love the other and that you just have sex all the time. Number three, I love this one. This particular person said, you know, really, what's so hard about it? You wake up, you kiss, you go to work, you come home, you eat dinner, you talk. You talk about the weekend and what you may or may not do. You watch some TV. You go to sleep. You press rewind and press play, and you do the same thing over and over again. Why is marriage so difficult?
Well, someone wrote about that. The author of Marriage actually said in 1 Corinthians 7:28, but if you marry, such will have trouble in this life. I mean, we've heard, if you've been here for the conference, those warnings have been told to us. We know that marriage is hard and marriage takes work. Probably when Susan and I can think back, we've been 28 years, we were in Colorado, and I can tell you that when we got, if y'all remember Gabe and Whitney that got married last night, I guarantee you that they probably, their room may look something like this because ours did. You bring your luggage in, you're taking everything off, and you're ready for honeymoon time. Day two of our honeymoon, we had the biggest fight of probably the whole time that we had been together. And we dated for a little over a year. And, you know, looking back on that now, we kind of have a pretty good idea why that occurred. For me, one of the things is a void happened in my life immediately when we got married. And some of you guys may know what that is. But the pursuit was no longer on. I'd already caught the prize. You know, for a long time while we dated, I did things that after we got married, that I just stopped doing. I'll give you an example. I would drive from college to her hometown in DeSoto, and I'd go there just to spend, I would drive that hour and a half drive just to spend a couple of hours with her. I would be so hard pressed to impress her mother. Around the house, I would be doing things all the time. You know, I wanted to shine for her mom and dad. And the night that we got married, I just looked back on that. I said, that boy, it was gone. I'd won my prize. I'd won her. So we're going to get back to that a little bit and talk about expectations in just a moment. But I just want you to keep that thought in mind as we go forward.
Why is married so hard? Raul and I married a broken person. And the truth is, every single one of us in this room is broken. When we came down the aisle, we brought our baggage with us. We brought past hurt. We brought family of origin. We brought our expectations and our junk from childhood. We brought our parents' model of marriage. We brought all the brokenness, the sin, the selfishness, the pride in control, and we placed our needs on the other person, expecting him or her to meet all of those needs. Guys, if I could go back and press rewind and go back to that year, 1984, I wish that Pastor Crouch had said this. When he turned Raul and I to the audience, he said what every pastor says, I want to welcome you, Mr. and Mrs., and they share their last name. He said, I want to welcome Mr. and Mrs. Cox. But what I really wished he had said was this, you know, guys, I want to welcome you, Mr. and Mrs. Broken. I want to welcome to you, Mr. and Mrs. Sinner. And, you know, they're going to have their arguments and disagreements. It's not if, it's when. And so I want you to begin praying for them right now.
You know, when Susan came down that aisle, I knew that I wanted our family to follow Christ. In fact, we had met in college at a college campus ministry, and we actually served there. And so it wasn't that early on that our hearts were not seeking the Lord. But one of the things that I was reminded of just a while back ago that I did not want to emulate what was modeled under my home growing up. But how to get there as a young man newly married, I wasn't sure what that looked like.
As I walked down the aisle that night, I remember thinking, man, this is a lot of fun. I love this dress. I've spent a lot of money getting my hair done, nails, makeup, the whole bit. I hope Raul appreciates all of this. Coming down the aisle, I thought, gosh, you know what? I hope the sex is going to be really good tonight. I hope that the apartment is going to be just what we always thought it would be. The home that we would purchase later, the number of kids that we would have. And as I walked down the aisle, I kept thinking, this is the man that is going to make me happy. This is the man, again, that's going to fulfill my every desire and dream. And what I had on my mind, guys, was the wedding. What I didn't have on my mind was the marriage.
So we all bring baggage in from our past, and we've kind of been alluding to that. And before my parents got divorced, my father was called by God to be the head of the family, just like all men are called, and all men are the head of the family. The question to us is, how well are we being the head of the family? How well are we leading? Because you are the head. I just know back then that the example for me was an example of anything but spiritual things. I mean, my father never stepped into a church unless it was for a wedding or a burial.
Me coming down the aisle, there's more stuff in my junk, in my baggage. You know, some of us, when we come down the aisle, we bring a Ziploc baggie of issues. Some of us bring that rolling piece of luggage behind you. And then, guys, there's some that bring, back that U-Haul truck up and dump it. The truth is, we've got it all. And the things that I brought with me, past hurts that Roll knew nothing about. I'm also a survivor of childhood sex abuse. My husband knew no idea what I was bringing into our marriage. Roll had no idea that the marriage that had been modeled for me was that my mom was in control. My mom made all the decisions. And if my mom was not happy, you know the rest of that saying. If mama's not happy, nobody in the house is happy and the family is miserable. My dad surrendered to that control. And so I'm looking at this view of, well, the wife is going to be in charge of everything. And so we marry, and guess who didn't get the memo? Yeah, our first fight was brutal. And it was over two things. The two things that we fought about right away was, who's going to be in control of all the money in the checkbook? Well, that's going to be me, right? That's what I had seen modeled in my home. Who was going to make the decisions? That was going to be me. And that he was just supposed to go along for the ride. Not the way God had designed it, and not the way God had it planned to be our best.
And the second fight was?
Do what? Oh, gosh, over in-laws.
Yeah.
Yeah, our first two fights, money and in-laws.
Well, that was on our second day of our honeymoon. And, I still don't remember, but I will confess what she said is that, and I don't remember this, but she said that I had called my mother on our honeymoon. And I still today don't remember doing that, but that was one of the fights. But anyway.
Yeah, he did. Called his
anybody
mama.
Guilty of that, I wouldn't suggest it. Anyway. But you know what we've soon discovered, and through this journey, is that the second thing that we discovered was the biggest problem in our marriage was me.
Yeah, the biggest problem in our marriage was me.
Yeah, we talked about our second wedding night, the big argument that we had. But, you know, from that point forward, we started looking at each other's imperfections, something that we weren't looking at before. We were looking at the best of each other. You know, I was pursuing her. She was pursuing me. We're looking at the best of each other. And then when the marriage came, then all of a sudden, then the control part came. She said, you know, the idea that I would call my mom on a wedding night, maybe if it was just a date, it would have been, oh, you know, he cares for his mom. But things changed after the marriage, after the marriage ceremony. And again, we just started looking at each other's shortcomings. And I think that we began to judge each other on our own personal scales of weight and not on what God's word was for our lives.
So we look at you right now. I mean, you guys are a good-looking group. There are beautiful women in this room, and there are some good-looking guys. And so the face that you put on is that everything is great. But here's what I want all of us to connect with. Every single one of us in this room represents a story. There's a story being written in every marriage in this room. And everyone in this room could be at a story where your marriage may be a 10. Maybe you are just living the dream. Maybe you are loving each other the way God has called you to, and you are bearing fruit to the point your fruit basket's overflowing. Oprah's going to call you, start a new show, and put you online as, hey, this is how you do Marriage America, wake up. Some of you in this room, you may be thinking, man, that's not me. I'm not a 10. Maybe an 8, maybe a 7. Maybe there's some things that have happened in your marriage that we want to take ground on. Maybe you've noticed that your tone, you know, we talked about tone this morning. Maybe that's something that you need to look at. Or you know what? There may be some 3s and 4s in the room. There might be some 2s. There might be some 1s. You could even be in the same boat that Roll and I were in. We were in the negative numbers. See, here's our story. We'd like to take a few minutes and have you jump on board and turn the pages with us. 3 years ago, we were to be no more. We were divorcing. Assets were being divided. We were done. Didn't like each other. Didn't want to be in the same room with one another. So what got us there? Roll and I met in college. He talked about it earlier. We actually met in an organization called Campus Crusade for Christ. Because see, what I wanted was I wanted to date someone that knew about God. My family knew about God. I had watched my mom and dad get all of us dressed and ready for church to go look good for Jesus. We wore those patent leather shoes, the white gloves. I just showed my age. We grabbed our Bibles. Our hair was curly. We walked in, sang the songs, flipped the pages in the Bible, never really understood it, didn't really read it. Came home and put it back on the nightstand and lived our life the way we wanted to the rest of the week, only to do the same routine again on Sunday. Raul grew up in a family.
You know, my dad was just passive. I could just tell you that my mother was the spiritual leader of the home, and then on Sunday mornings I had two older sisters and a younger brother, and she was the one that got us dressed on every Sunday morning, and we watched it. So not that we didn't go to church, it's just that she led in spiritual matters in the home.
Yeah, so we really didn't have our focus where it needed to be. So I dated all of Raul's roommates to get to him. There was something I knew about him that was different. And it was Raul knew about God. And so we dated. And we did everything really fast. We dated. We got engaged. We got married. And 5 months into the honeymoon bliss, after many arguments already, we find out we're pregnant. And so here we are. We're with baby number one. And then lo and behold, here comes baby number two. And so here we are, these two newlyweds, really didn't have a clue what we were doing, only that marriage was supposed to look a certain way. You had to look the part, you had to play the part, so the mask had to be set. White picket fence had to be painted. We literally had a home with a white picket fence. Our girls had those big fat hair bows because that made them, they were known as the bowhead girls. And so here we are, living life, coming to church on Sunday, trying to live out the dream of what it means to be married and be a family, again, had no clue. So we played what our parents had taught us. We played the part. Did church, came home, Bibles back on the nightstand, lived our life the way we wanted to for the rest of the week. Well, we continued that pattern year after year after year. We invested our time in our girls. We invested our time in our jobs. I was a school teacher at the time. And I began taking care of other people's kids. And I mean, just really investing our time there. And the girls grow up. And they move out. During that season of growth, Raul and I began to turn outward. Raul was pursuing his business. I was pursuing relationships with kids in my school. I also pursued another relationship that was not my husband. One particular afternoon when I was in the gym, I made eye contact with somebody. And I'm not going to lie to you, it felt good. I went back the very next afternoon hoping to have a conversation with this person, and guess what? I did. And I liked talking to that person. I go back the next afternoon and see the conversation wasn't enough. This time, phone numbers were exchanged. Texting began. Emailing began. Until I made the decision to have an affair. So here we are in a marriage where the masks are on. The bowhead girls are dutied up and ready to go do their thing. And Raul is pursuing his business. And I'm literally living a dual life. I thought in all my pride and all my arrogance that I could control how this thing was going to roll out. And so I'm living my life this way, clearly living in sin, choosing what I knew was wrong. My husband is moving this way. The lies upon lies that I told, I could not tell enough lies to cover the lies, to cover the lies. We live out in Rockwall by Lake Ray Hubbard. So many of my cell phones are in the bottom of that lake trying to hide the lies that were going on in our family. One particular night, I remember I was home alone that evening, and I remember saying to God, this is how stupid I was. I just said, you know what, God, there's something that I need to tell you. How stupid, right? Like God didn't already know what I had been doing. I said, I'm in a situation, God, and I need help. And Lord, I know that I need to end this, and God, I don't know how. And Lord, to be honest with you, I don't even know if I want to. And God, I would even call it an addiction. And so I'm up all night long thinking, what do I do with this? you know, God calls us to confess to one another. Well, my girls came home from college 24 hours later, called me back into a room, and had my computer up wide open. All of my lies, all of my secrets, phone numbers, name, everything have been revealed. And I remember standing in front of both of those girls and thinking, okay, God, really, my kids? And then I thought, okay, I can lie about this, I can tell this, I can keep this a secret. God, I'll just give the Swiss cheese version, this will work. And so I'm thinking, I've got to tell him. So I'm up all night long trying to piece together how I'm going to say this until I finally go to him the next morning and I begin to reveal my story that had been playing out under our roof. How many of you in this room know the movie The War of the Roses? No, whoa, yeah. One, thank you.
Same, yeah.
There's a scene in this movie, it's Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas, and the scene in this movie where there's a fight that is escalated out of control to the point to where a 911 call was made. Absolutely insanity in our home. Broken glass, broken dreams, broken, just brokenness. So what do you do? What do you do when marriage gets hard? How do you handle it? You know, we went to friends and family, and we were told, hey, Susan, you know what? That's the unforgivable one. Yeah, that's Demi Moore, Red Letter A. You know, you're done. Mom and Dad said, Susan, we love you, but we'll help you find a place to live because he's not going to forgive you. You realize that, don't you, Susan? Your life is now over. It's done. And so after living at Mom and Dad's house for a bit and just trying to figure out where in the world this thing was going to end and how in the Lord's name do you begin to put this together, I'm driving back home and I get to Roll and it's just hurt, 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 trying to just spew at hurt, and we just got on this crazy hamster wheel of chaos. A friend invited us to check out this church. We were not members at the time, and we came. We learned about a ministry known as Reengage. And what we heard that night as a couple began to share their story, we too heard hurt, brokenness, crisis, how marriage is hard. But what we heard layered on top of that was how God heals and how God restores and how God redeems and how God rebuilds. And we also learned about how God has called us to love each other as Christ loves the church. And with that comes the forgiveness and the grace, peace. So I'm going to fast forward. We dive in to Reengage. Reengage is a 16-week journey. We meet every single Wednesday night of the year. Roll and I began learning what it means to live a godly marriage. We really learned what it meant when we came down that aisle that our focus was to be on the marriage and not the wedding. Our focus was to be on Christ and how Christ was going to be the one to meet and fulfill all of our needs. And so we finished the Reengage journey, radically changed individually, different, just crazy different, incredible things that happened in our home with our girls that you guys will get to hear about later this afternoon. But just how God began to move in Roll and I, and how God literally is the one that healed our marriage. We were asked to come one night and speak at Watermark and share a story. And the story stopped with me, because what I did not know that night was that Roll had his own storyline going. And so now I'm going to pass the baton to him.
Well, something about Reengage, for those of you that may not know, is that the program set around a closed group, a concept to where you would have maybe four or five other couples that are sitting in a room with you. You would have a facilitator couple, and it's kind of leading the group. And you start diving into biblical principles and what God's Word says about marriage. And to be quite honest with you, I think growing up, I tell my girls this today, I said, daughters, I spent more time learning about how to put your bicycles in dollhouses and reading those instructions than I ever did on what God's principles were for marriage. So we learned a lot and went through a lot. And, you know, just Susan said, our marriage just was transformed. But there was something that was missing. And that was the, and Susan said, so we're standing here this night. We're talking to probably to about 200 people. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it was a big crowd. And I just remember that I'm supposed to be telling just about the process of re-engage. And I just remember what a hypocrite I am. That I went through this whole program and I just kept a secret from my group, the people that we journeyed with, the people that were very transparent and authentic with me, that I got to know well. But they got to know me well, but I held on to this secret. And the truth is that the infidelity didn't start with Susan, but she didn't know that, and I never confessed that. The infidelity had started with me 8 years earlier. I was on the West Coast, traveled a lot from coast to coast at the time, and met a lady I didn't know, and I was unfaithful to Susan. And that pattern began to repeat itself over time, just simply because of where our marriage was. We were not intimate and connected, and so as guilty and shameful as I was about that, and asking God for forgiveness, and you know, and in my own thoughts, and that I would take that sin and just put it in a steel box, put steel chains around it, and never tell anybody. And that's what I did. And until God just pierced my heart and just said, you're not going to be able to move forward. And I literally just had a great conviction. And so for 2 days, I went and without sleep. And I called one of the guys that I had journeyed through this group with, and he said, I sat him down, I told him this story, and he goes, well, Roy, you're going to have to tell her. And I said, I can't tell her. I said, you got to remember this, you know, you don't see all the devastation, and we probably don't portray that well, but it was over a year of just dark, depressing time in our home. Our girls actually got to the point where they said, why don't y'all just really go ahead and get a divorce? Because it was just that bad. They didn't see any hope. And I told him, I said, if I tell them, then it's just going to come crashing all back down. And he just said, well, just remember this, Raul, that you're not giving your wife, first of all, the opportunity to forgive you. You're not following God's principles on asking for forgiveness. So we went to the scripture on that. And he said that you just have to trust God. And he said, and then we got off of scripture, and he just said, well, just put it this way. He goes, if you don't tell your wife, you will never know the joy, the intimacy, and the love that he wants you to have with her. You may have a good marriage, but you'll never experience that. And that bothered me. I thought, wow, who would not want what the best is that God has for marriage? So it took a day or two, and I told her. It was late at night. It's kind of a cool thing came of that. It was a horrible night, actually, but there was God's light and grace came through that in a great way. I told her. Ended up leaving the house about 1 o'clock in the morning. Got a call from another guy in my group, and he said, hey, Raul, you need to come home. And I'm like, to my home, to your home? And he goes, you need to come home to your home. So I drove home and opened the door. It was about 1:30 in the morning. And in our living room was our community group. Ladies were in their pajamas. Guys were, somebody, she had called somebody, and they made phone calls. Some of these people drove from Dallas and Saxe and just different, Plano, different places there in our group. And they got out of bed at 1 o'clock in the morning, was at our house by 1:30, and called me and told me to come home. And I just thought, what a picture of what God's people do. Because when she told me her story and the trouble that we went through, we didn't have that. We had some friends that told us divorce. We had family members tell us divorce. But people that really knew biblical principles and what God called us to do, and what marriage was supposed to look like, and to show God's greatness, and just what a broken picture that would be if we followed through with that decision and followed our feelings and emotions. And so we did what we should have done that night. I sat down and told the story and cleared the air that night. And we have taken that story out of out of the box, if you will, a steel box, and we took the chains off, and we just share it to people that and hope that they, wherever they may be in their marriage, that there's always hope. And that if your marriage is in a good place, to encourage you to build the hedges and be intentional about your marriage. So what we'd like to do is kind of talk to you just five things that we wish we would have known before we got married. And some of these things, you know, they're going to overlap. You've actually heard a couple of these, but I'll let you go ahead. Yeah.
That was a great lead in what he just said earlier about just where does your hope come from? You know, if you happen to be a marriage today where maybe something has happened that has brought pain into the relationship, as believers, where does our hope come from? It's that relationship with Christ. And so, number one, I wish coming down that aisle that night in that white dress, I wish that my focus had been that Christ would be the number one priority. He just wasn't. See, I had everything out of whack. I had Susan first. I had me at the top and what I wanted and when I wanted it. And it was husband, kids, and job, and everything else was this way. But Christ was just simply not number one. Marriage is all about a relationship. And while it does encompass the relationship with your spouse, guys, it's got everything to do with our relationship with Christ. We entered into our marriage focusing on the other person. We put God on the nightstand. You know, we thought, hey, it's Easter, it's Christmas, let's get religious. Or if somebody's sick, let's go pray for him. Or maybe an occasional prayer before the meal. We did not live out what God tells us in John 15:5. I'm the vine, you're the branches. He who abides in me and I in him, man, you're going to bear a lot of fruit. Abiding in him means to live in a close, intimate relationship with him. I could not love Raul until I loved Jesus first. And ladies, I could not be that wife. I could not be the kind of woman that God has called me to be until I was walking in that relationship with Christ. And practically, what that looks like now is I'm in the Word. I have quiet time. That time for me, it works in the morning, but that time has got to be first with God so that I'm fed and I'm fueled and so that I can come and love Raw the way God has called me to. Because see, if I abide in Christ, I'm going to act like Christ when marriage gets hard. When Raw confessed his infidelity to me, think for a minute, I had gone through, you know, my confession piece, and just been in that walk, that pursuit of Christ. I'm following God. I'm diving in deep. I've done the 16 lessons in Reengage. I had women in my grill telling me what to do, holding me accountable. And then, boom, the other shoe dropped. Think about how radically different it would have been if my relationship with Christ had not been where it was when Raul confessed to me. I was so able to offer grace and forgiveness and begin to move on a road of healing and moving toward oneness. Our relationship with Christ has to come first so that we can love well. My favorite verse, and our girls often ask me, Mom, are you ever going to get a tattoo? I say, yeah, I don't know. But if I do, it'd be Colossians 1:17. For he is above all things. And in him, all things hold together. Translated to marriage, God is above your marriage. Yeah, and in God, your marriage holds together.
So pursuing Christ, in John 15:5, we talked about that as being number one. Number two, and we mentioned this a while ago, the biggest problem in our marriage was me, and recognizing that. John talked about it, John McGee talked about it, drawing a circle around yourself and work on the person in the circle. That's a responsibility. And one thing I've learned through this program and through our journey is that I can't control what Susan does, and she can't control what I do. You know, even going through trust and issues, and you put everything in place to try to stop things that may be happening, that she may be doing, that you know, because of the infidelity. And you cannot control that. it would only stir and cause your heart to be darker and burdened. Because the technology today, the desires of people's hearts will produce the fruit that they want. That takes us back to John said to the Matthew 7, 5 verse, why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye? And that's what we were doing. When we first came here, I came to get Susan fixed. I was so glad to hear about a re-engage program that would get her fixed, and she was thinking the same thing about me.
Number three. Man, I tell you what, you've heard this phrase, the grass is greener on the other side. The grass is not greener on the other side. I have a neighbor across the street that has the most beautiful yard. I mean, it is perfect, plush green. You want to take your shoes off and run barefoot in it. And every morning that I go out to get the paper, you know, I see that. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. My yard, not so much. It's dead. It just doesn't look anything like this guy's yard. And so as I look at something that is beautiful, I begin to think, well, I've got to have that what I see. You know, that just desire to have something that's not mine. And there's even a jealousy that comes into place because I tend to think that's better than what I have. I don't know about you, ladies in the room and men in the room, but have you ever looked at somebody else's marriage and you think, man, I just wish we were married like that? Or dang, I wish my husband would say the things that her husband says to her. Or, man, I just wonder what it would be like to be married to him. And so what I've learned about that and just my own walk of choice of being unfaithful, I have learned that infidelity is like, I'm going to just describe it like this. It's like a pile of duty with whipped cream and sprinkles on top. Yeah, that which it draws to us is going to be so sweet and so wonderful and so much better than what we have, but yet it is so far away from how God has called us to be that, yeah, it stinks and it's rotten and it brings separation and death. See, our focus was not on Christ. And the marriage was wide open to go choose those doors that John talked about earlier. You know, John showed the image of the door with all the locks on it. So I want you to pretend for a moment that you and your spouse are standing in the middle of a round room. And surrounding you are doors. And every door has a label. One door has infidelity. One door has pornography. One door has alcohol. One door has drugs. One door has work. One door has money, one door has kids, and one door has the D word, divorce. And so if we're standing in the middle of that room and we're looking for the other person to fulfill us and to meet all of those needs that only Christ can, after a while, we're going to start to look for an exit, somehow to get out, or maybe to numb that which is the hurt that's going on in the marriage. And so that's what Raul and I did. We stood in the room. Christ was not first. We could not possibly love each other without that connection with Christ. So we start looking for the exit. In our case, we chose to be unfaithful. And so as believers, we have to be able to stand in that room. And as John mentioned earlier, lock every single door, throw away the key, and be committed to the one that heals. God tells us in Matthew 19:6. They're no longer two, but one flesh. What God has joined together, let no open door separate. We've got to be willing to close the doors and focus on Him.
Okay, the fourth thing, and this is so critical for us, and I think it is for every individual as a believer, if you're pursuing Christ, and as a couple pursuing Christ, and that is we cannot do this alone. Hebrews 10:24-25. And let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. There's other verses about, you know, just accountability that Paul writes about. But, you know, the thing about it is that we did have friends. I mean, we had a lot of friends. We had parties. We entertained. We went to church socials. But if you asked us how we were doing, it was always we were doing great. How are your kids doing? Well, they couldn't be better. we just did a great job of just hiding behind the mask. And being transparent and sharing with one another and having people speak truth into you and covering the blind spots that you don't see is actually the way that we're called to live according to God's words. We need to have people and community in our people in our lives as a community speaking truth to us. And, you know, the verse of iron sharpening iron, holding each other accountable.
Yeah, I just want to piggyback on something that you just said. It was so incredible, I'll use that word, to be in that small group of other couples and to have other women look at me and say, "Hey, Susan, I'm going to call you out on something. I love you. But, you know, you profess to be a follower of Christ. And so if that's the case, then you believe his word to be true. And that means that you believe to live in accordance to his word. So that means, Susan, that your actions will be in accordance to his word." And to have other women just come along beside me out of love, to sharpen me, to teach me, to grow me, to see me in action in my marriage, and to be able to come alongside and shepherd, was just probably the most incredible gift that could have ever been given. And the same thing with the men for Raul. You know, when we came together on Wednesday nights, to have those men pull him in and begin to speak truth, and just like you said, to sharpen you.
Number five.
I love this one. Why is it dating stops when we say I do? It just, when we were married, it just, and Raul said it earlier, you know, we stopped the pursuit. And when you stop pursuing something, you begin to lose the connection. See, here's the thing about dating. Dating builds connections. When you think about before you guys were married, you ask her out and you had a plan, or maybe she asked you out and she had a plan, and maybe it was dinner. Maybe it was to go play games or to go to a sporting event. But all the while that you were doing this, you enjoyed being with her or him. You enjoyed having fun. And during that time, you were making connections with one another. And I don't believe that we should ever stop dating. When that connecting process fades, the relationship begins to suffer. See, Raul and I didn't stand at the altar that day and look at each other and take our vows and then say, "Hey, you know what? In 23 years, we're going to just maybe go do something else because this just thing isn't probably going to work out right." No. If we reflect back, it all comes back to Christ. That's it. When we looked at the title for the session and we threw some, you know, some ideas around about what would we call this thing, you know, one of the guys on staff just said, "You know, why don't you just say, you know, it really shouldn't be this hard." And it really shouldn't. And so I hope that as all of us continue out the rest of today, I hope that that is that one thing, that one nugget, that one big idea that you could tuck away, that would be what you would focus on first. That, you know, before I can love Raul, I've got to love Christ first. And before Raul can love me, he's got to love Christ first. That's still your thunder?
No, that was it. No, that was good. I will tell you just real briefly, just real quick about marriage. How many of you have been to a marriage conference before this one? Okay, and Susan and I have too. And I'll tell you about this marriage conference, and it's great. It's wonderful. It's a lot of fun. It's probably, in fact, it is the best marriage conference I've attended. But marriages don't grow from marriage conferences. Marriages grow when we are pursuing Christ on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And you'll learn that. They'll probably come up at the end of this. But Susan and I, we went to those marriage conferences. We went to counseling. But the marriage conferences, we were great, and we were rah-ha-ha, let's go, and then probably 3 months max, we were back doing the things that we were doing before, just working back in the old pattern. So, you know, I hope that you took notes and getting this, the things that, just the pattern, the God's principles that help marriages towards oneness, and just know that it's probably the most important work that you'll ever do. We just appreciate you letting us share. Thank you.
Yeah. I do want to say, yeah. I'll tell you a little bit about re-engage.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Here's what's so funny is when Raul and I first started all this, I was teaching school, and we went through, the whole re-engage journey. And we came back, and we were serving as lay leaders, and we served for probably 2 years. Watermark called one day and said, "Hey, since you guys are up here all the time, have you ever thought about going on staff?" And I just said, "Oh my gosh, you bet. How soon can I be there?" And I'm going to tell you why. We get a front row seat to life change every week. We were talking as you guys were coming in yesterday, and the couples were coming in the front door, just to see transformed couples that we knew just 6-7 months ago were headed to divorce. And the D words are off the table, and marriages have been reconciled, and just story after story after story. And so I do want to put a little plug in about Reengage. If you are looking for an intentional way to pursue oneness with your spouse, we'd love to invite you to come on any Wednesday night to Watermark. We meet in a room called The Loft. And when you leave in a few minutes, there's a postcard on the back table that tells you everything you want to know, what time it starts, where we meet. Child care is provided. We don't charge anything for child care, so we take care of your babies. Child care up to the age of 12. And so I just want you to consider that. If that's something that you think that you and your wife or you and your husband might want to do, we would love to answer some questions if you would like at the end and help you in any way and help you get started. And again, we just thank you so much for being here.
Okay, thank you.